third floor. Unlike the other floors, guards stood at the landing, preventing me from simply walking to Maxon's door. "I need to speak to the prince," I said, trying to sound firm.
"It's very late, miss,"
the one to the left said. "Maxon won't mind," I promised. The one to the right smirked a little.
"I don't think he'd appreciate any company right now, miss."
My forehead creased in thought as I played that sentence in my head again. He was with another girl. I had to assume it was Chris sitting there in his room, talking, laughing, or maybe giving up on her no-kissing rule. A maid came around the corner with a tray in her hands, passing me as she descended the stairs. I stepped to the side, trying to decide if I should push the guards to let me through anyway or give up. As I went to open my mouth again, the guard cut me off.
"You need to go back to bed, miss."
I wanted to yell at them or do something because I felt so powerless. It wouldn't help, though, so I left. I heard the one guard, the smirking one, mumble something as I walked away, and that made it worse. Was he making fun of me? Feeling sorry for me? I didn't need his pity. I was feeling bad enough on my own. When I got back to the second floor, I was surprised to see that the maid who had passed me was there, kneeling as if she was adjusting her shoe, but clearly doing nothing of the sort. She raised her head as I approached, picking up her tray and walking toward me.
"He's not in his room," she whispered.
"Who, Maxon?" She nodded.
"Try downstairs."
I smiled, shaking my head in surprise.
"Thank you."
She shrugged.
"He's not anywhere you couldn't find him if you looked anyway. Besides," she said, her eyes full of admiration, "we like you."
She moved away, heading down to the first floor very quickly. I wondered exactly who we was. But for now, her simple act of kindness was enough. I stood for a moment, leaving some space between the two of us, and headed downstairs. The great room was open but empty, as was the dining room. I checked the women's room, thinking that would be a funny place to go on a date, but they weren't there either. I asked the guards by the door, and they assured me that Maxon hadn't gone into the gardens, so I checked a few of the libraries and parlors before guessing that he and Chris must have either parted ways or gone back to his room. Giving up, I turned a corner and headed for the back stairwell, which was closer than the main one. I didn't see anything, but as I approached, I heard the distinct hiss of a whisper. I slowed, not wanting to intrude and not completely sure where the sound was coming from. Another whisper. A flirtatious giggle. A warm sigh. The sounds focused, and I was certain where they were coming from. I took one more step forward, looked to my left, and saw a couple embracing in the shadows. After the image settled and my eyes adjusted to the light, a shock went through me. Maxon's blonde hair was unmistakable, even in the darkness. How many times had I seen it just so in the dim light of the gardens? But what I'd never seen before, never imagined before, was how that hair would look with Celeste's long fingers, nails painted red, digging into it. Maxon was all but pinned to the wall by Celeste's body. Her free hand was pressed against his chest, and her leg was wrapped around his, the slit of her dress revealing her long leg, tinted slightly blue in the dark of the hall. She pulled back slightly, only to fall back into him slowly, teasing him, it seemed. I kept waiting for him to tell her to get off him, to tell her she wasn't what he wanted. But he didn't. Instead, he kissed her. She lavished in it and giggled again at his affection. He whispered something in her ear, and Celeste leaned in and kissed him, deeper, harder than before. The strap of her dress fell off her shoulder, leaving what seemed like miles of exposed skin down her back. Neither of them bothered to fix it. I was frozen. I wanted to scream or cry, but my throat felt constricted. Why, of everyone, did it have to be her? Celeste's lips slid off Maxon's and settled onto his neck. She gave another obnoxious giggle and kissed him once more. Maxon closed his eyes and smiled. With Celeste no longer blocking him, I was in Maxon's line of sight. I meant to run. I meant to disappear, to evaporate. Instead, I stood there. So when Maxon opened his eyes, he saw me. As Celeste drew pictures and kisses up and down his neck, Maxon and I merely stared at each other. His smile now gone, Maxon had suddenly turned to stone. The shock in his eyes willed me finally to move. Celeste didn't notice, so I backed away quietly, not even stirring a breath. Once I was out of earshot, I broke into a run, blazing past all the guards and butlers working late into the night. The tears started coming before I made it up the main stairway. I pulled myself up and moved quickly to my room. I pushed back the concerned guard and through the doorway, sitting on my bed facing the balcony. In the quiet stillness of my room, I felt my heart ache. So stupid, America. So stupid. I'd go home. I'd forget this ever happened. And I'd marry Aspen. Aspen was the only person I could count on. It wasn't long before there was a knock on my door, and Maxon came in without waiting for an answer. He stormed across the room, looking about as angry as I was. Before he could say a word, I confronted him. You lied to me.
What? When?
When haven't you been? How could the same person who talked about proposing to me want to be caught dead in a hallway with someone like her?
What I do with her has absolutely nothing to do with how I feel about you.
You're joking, right? Or because you're the next king, I suppose it's acceptable for you to have half-naked girls draped across you whenever you like?
Maxon looked stricken. No, that's not what I think at all.
Why her? I asked, looking to the ceiling. Why, of anyone on the planet, would you want her? When I looked to Maxon for an answer, he was shaking his head and looking around the room. Maxon, she's an actress, a fake. You have to be able to see that under all that makeup and the push-up bra is nothing but a girl who wants to manipulate you to get what she wants. Maxon huffed out a laugh.
Actually, I do.
I was taken aback by his calm. Then why? But I already had my answer. He knew. Of course he knew. He'd been raised here. Gregory's diaries were probably his bedtime stories. I didn't know why I'd expected otherwise. How naive had I been? When I kept thinking that there was a better option than me for his princess, I'd been imagining Chris. She was lovely and patient, and a million things that I wasn't. But I had been seeing her next to a different Maxon. For the man he would have to be to follow in Gregory Ilya's footsteps, the only girl here for him was Celeste. No one else would be so content to keep a country under her thumb. That's it, I said, wiping my hands in front of me. You wanted a decision, and here it is. I am done with this. I'm done with the selection. I'm done with all the lies, and I am especially done with you. God, I can't believe how stupid I was.
You're not done, America. He contradicted me quickly, his stance saying as much as his words. You're done when I say you are. You're upset right now, but you aren't done.
I gripped my hair, feeling like I was seconds away from pulling it all out by the roots. What is wrong with you? Are you delusional? What makes you think that I will ever be okay with what I just saw? I hate that girl, and you were kissing her. I want nothing to do with you.
Good God, woman, you never let me get a word in edgewise.
What could you possibly say that could explain that away? Just send me home. I don't want to be here anymore. Our conversation had been going back and forth so quickly that his silence was startling.
No.
I was enraged. Wasn't this exactly what he'd been asking for? Maxon Shreve, you are nothing but a child who has his hands on a toy that he doesn't want, but can't stand for someone else to have. Quietly, Maxon spoke.
I understand that you're angry, but...
I shoved him. I'm beyond angry. Maxon remained calm.
America, Do not call me a child, and do not push me.
I shoved him again. What are you going to do about it? Maxon grabbed my wrists, pinning my arms behind my back, and I saw the anger in his eyes. I was glad it was there. I wanted him to provoke me. I wanted a reason to hurt him. I could tear him to bits right now. But there was no rage in him. Instead, I felt the warm buzz of electricity that had been missing for a long time. Maxon's face was inches from mine, his eyes searching my own, perhaps wondering how he'd be received, perhaps not caring at all. Though it was all wrong, I still wanted it. My lips parted before I realized what was happening. I shook my head to clear it and stepped back, moving toward the balcony. He didn't put up a fight as I pulled away. I took a few steadying breaths before I turned to him. Are you going to send me home? I asked quietly. Maxon shook his head, either unable or unwilling to speak. I ripped his bracelet off my wrist and threw it across the room. Then go, I whispered. I turned back to look out my balcony and waited a few heavy moments to hear the click of the door. Once he left, I fell to the floor and sobbed. He and Celeste were so much alike. Everything about them was a show. And I knew that he would spend the rest of his life sweet-talking the public into thinking he was wonderful, all the while keeping them trapped where they were. Just like Gregory. I sat on my floor, legs crossed under my nightgown. As upset as I was with Maxon, I was even more upset with myself. I should have fought harder. I should have done more. I shouldn't be sitting here so defeated. I wiped the tears away and assessed the situation. I was done with Maxon, but I was still here. I was done with the competition, but I still had a presentation due. Aspen might not think I was tough enough to be a princess, and he was right. But he did have faith in me. I knew that. And so did my father. And so did Nicoletta. I wasn't here to win anymore. So how could I go out with a bang? Chapter 27. When Sylvia asked what I would need for my presentation, I told her a small desk for some books and an easel for a poster I was designing. She was particularly excited about my poster. I was the only girl here with any true experience making art. I spent hours writing my speech onto note cards so I wouldn't miss anything, flagging sections in books to be my resources mid-presentation, and rehearsing it in the mirror to get through the parts that particularly worried me. I tried not to think too hard about what I was doing, otherwise my whole body would start trembling. I asked Anne to make me a dress that looked innocent, which made her eyebrows pucker. You make it sound like we've been sending you out in lingerie, she said mockingly. I chuckled. That's not what I mean at all. You know I love all the dresses you've made me. I just want to seem angelic. She smiled to herself. I think we can come up with something. They must have been working like crazy because I didn't see Anne, Mary, or Lucy the day of the report until the hour before it started, when they came bustling in with the dress. It was white, gauzy, and light, adorned with one long stream of green and blue tulle running along the right side. The bottom fell in such a way that it looked like a cloud, and its empire waist added a level of virtue and grace to the gown. I felt lovely in that dress. It was by far my favorite of everything they'd designed for me, and I was glad it worked out that way. It would probably be the last dress of theirs I'd ever wear. It had been hard to keep my plan a secret, but I did. When the girls asked what I was doing, I simply said it was a surprise. I got a few skeptical looks for that, but I didn't care. I asked my maids not to touch the things on my desk, not even to clean, and they obeyed, leaving my notes face down. No one knew. The person I most wanted to tell was Aspen, but I refrained. Part of me feared he would talk me out of it, and I would cave. Another part feared he would be far too gung-ho. As my maids worked to make me look beautiful, I stared into the mirror and knew I was walking into this alone. And that was for the best. I didn't want anyone, not my maids, not the other girls, and especially not Aspen, to get in trouble for my actions. All that was left to do was to put things in order.
Anne, Mary, would you please go get me some tea?
They looked at each other.
Both of us? Mary clarified.
Yes, please. They looked suspicious but curtsied and left all the same. Once they were gone, I turned to Lucy.
Sit with me, I invited, pulling her down to the padded bench on which I was sitting.
She complied, and I asked her simply,
Are you happy?
Miss?
You've seemed kind of sad lately. I was wondering if you were all right.
She dropped her head.
Is it that obvious?
A little, I admitted, wrapping my arm around her and holding her close. She sighed and placed her head on my shoulder. I was so happy that she forgot the invisible boundaries between us for a moment.
Have you ever wanted something you couldn't have?
I snorted.
Lucy, before I came here, I was a 5. There were too many things I couldn't have to bother counting.
In a very un-Lucy-like manner, a single tear fell to her cheek.
I don't know what to do. I'm stuck.
I straightened up and made her face me.
Lucy, I want you to know I think you can do anything, be anything. I think you're an amazing girl.
She gave me a weak smile.
Thank you, miss.
I knew we didn't have much time.
Listen, I need you to do something for me. I wasn't sure if I could count on the others, but I'm trusting you.
Though she looked confused, I could tell she meant it when she said,
Anything.
I reached over to one of the drawers and pulled out a letter.
Could you give this to Officer Ledger?
Officer Ledger?
I wanted to tell him thank you for how kind he's been, and I thought it might be inappropriate to give him a letter myself. You know.
It was a lame excuse, but it was the only way I could explain to Aspen why I did what I was going to do, and to tell him goodbye. I assumed I wouldn't have much time in the palace after tonight.
I can get this to him within the hour, she said eagerly.
Thank you. Tears threatened to come, but I pushed them down. I was scared, but there were so many reasons this needed to be done. We all deserved better. My family, Marley and Carter, Aspen, even my maids were all stuck because of Gregory's plans. I would think of them. When I walked into the studio for the report, I was clutching an armful of marked books and a portfolio for my poster. The setup was the same as always. The kings, queens, and Maxon seats to the right near the door, the selected in seats on the left, but in the middle where there was usually a podium for the king to speak at, or a set of chairs for interviews, there was a space for our presentations instead. I saw a desk and my easel, but also a screen that I assumed someone was showing slides on. That was impressive. I wondered who had found the resources to go that far. I went over to the last chair, next to Celeste, unfortunately, and placed my portfolio beside me, keeping my books on my lap. Natalie had a few books, too, and Elise was reading through her notes over and over. Chris was looking toward the sky and appeared to be reciting her presentation mentally. Celeste was checking her makeup. Sylvia was there, which sometimes happened when we had to discuss something she'd briefed us on, and today she was beside herself. This was probably the hardest we'd worked to date, and it would all reflect back on her. I inhaled sharply. I'd forgotten about Sylvia. Too late now.
You look beautiful, ladies, fantastic, she said as she approached. Now that you're all here, I want to explain a few things. First, the king will get up and give a few announcements, and then Gavril will introduce the topic of the evening, your philanthropy presentations.
Sylvia, usually a level-headed, palace-hardened machine, was giddy. She was actually bouncing as she spoke.
Now I know you've been practicing. You have 8 minutes, and if anyone has a question for you afterward, Gavril will facilitate that. Remember to stay alert and poised. The country is watching you. If you get lost, take a breath and move on. You're going to be wonderful. Oh, and you'll be going in the order in which you're seated. So, Lady Natalie, you're first, and Lady America will be last. Good luck, girls.
Sylvia skipped off to check and double-check things, and I tried to calm myself. Last. I guess that was a good thing. I suppose Natalie had it worse by being first up. Looking over, I saw her breaking into a sweat. It must be torture for her to try and focus like this. I couldn't help but stare at Celeste. She didn't know I'd seen her in Maxon, and I kept wondering why she never told anyone about it. The fact that she kept it to herself led me to believe it wasn't the first time. That made it so much worse. Nervous? I asked, watching her pick at something on her nail. No, this is a stupid idea and no one really cares. I'll be glad when it's over. And I'm a model, she said, finally looking at me. I'm naturally good at being in front of an audience. You do seem to have mastered how to pose, I mumbled. I could see the wheels turning as she tried to weed out the insult in there. She ended up rolling her eyes and looking away. Just then the king walked in with the queen by his side. They were speaking in whispers, and it looked very important. A moment later, Maxon entered, adjusting his cufflinks as he made his way to his seat. He came across so innocent, so clean in his suit, I had to remind myself that I knew better. He looked over at me. I wasn't going to be intimidated and turn away first, so I stared back. Then, tentatively, Maxon reached up and tugged at his ear. I slowly shook my head with an expression that conveyed we would never speak again if I had anything to do with it. A cold sweat broke out on my entire body as the presentation started. Natalie's proposal was short and slightly misinformed. She claimed that everything the rebels were doing was hateful and wrong, and their presence should be outlawed to keep Ilya's provinces safer. We all stared at her quietly once she was done. How did she not know that everything they did was already considered illegal? The queen's face in particular seemed incredibly sad as Natalie sat back down. Elise proposed a program that would involve members of the upper castes getting involved in a pen pal type of relationship with people in New Asia. She suggested that it would help strengthen the bonds between our countries and aid in ending the war. I wasn't sure that it would do any good, but it was a fresh reminder to Maxon and the public of the reason she was still here. The queen asked if she happened to know anyone in New Asia who would be open to being in the program, and Elise assured her that she did. Chris's presentation was spectacular. She wanted to revamp the public school systems, which I already knew was an idea near and dear to both the queen's and Maxon's hearts. As the daughter of a professor, I was sure she'd been thinking about this her whole life. She used the screen to show pictures from her home province's school that her parents had sent to her. It was plain to see the exhaustion on the teachers' faces, and in one picture it showed a room where four children were sitting on the floor, since there weren't enough chairs. The queen piped up with dozens of questions, and Chris was quick to answer. Using copies of old reports about financial issues we'd read, she even found a place where we could borrow the money to start the work and had ideas on how to continue the funding. As she sat down, I saw Maxon give her a smile and a nod. She responded by blushing and studying the lace on her dress. It was really cruel of him to play with her like that, considering how intimate he was with Celeste. But I was done interfering. Let him do what he wanted. Celeste's presentation was interesting, if slightly manipulative. She suggested that there be a minimum payment wage for some of the lower castes. It would be a sliding scale based on certifications. However, to get these certifications, the 5s, 6s, and 7s would have to go to school, which they would have to pay for, which would mostly benefit the 3s, as they were the authorized teachers. Since Celeste was a 2, she had no idea how we had to work around the clock to make ends meet. No one would have the time to get these certifications, meaning their pay would never change. On the surface, it sounded nice, but there was no way it would work. Celeste returned to her seat, and I trembled when I stood. For a brief second, I considered pretending to pass out. But I wanted this to happen. I just didn't want to face what would come after. I placed my poster, a diagram of the castes, on the easel, and set my books in order on the desk. I took a deep breath and gripped my cards. surprised to find that when I started, I didn't even need them.
Good evening, Ilya. Tonight I come to you not as one of the elite, not as a 3 or a 5, but as a citizen, an equal. Based on your caste, your experience of our country is shaded a very specific way. I can say that for certain myself. But it wasn't until recently that I understood how deep my love for Ilya went. Despite growing up sometimes without food or electricity, despite watching people I love forced into the stations we are assigned at birth with little hope for change, despite seeing the gaps between myself and others because of this number, even though we aren't very different. I looked over to the girls. I find myself in love with our country. I switched the cards automatically, knowing the break. What I propose wouldn't be simple. It might even be painful. But I genuinely believe it would benefit our entire kingdom. I inhaled. I think we should eliminate the castes. I heard more than one gasp. I chose to ignore them. I know there was a time when our country was new, when the assignment of these numbers helped organize something that was on the brink of not existing. But we are no longer that country. We are so much more now. To allow the talentless to have exalted privileges and suppress what could be the greatest minds in the world for the sake of an archaic organizational system is cruel, and it only stops us from becoming the best we can be. I noted a poll from one of Celeste's discarded magazines after we talked about having a volunteer army, and 65% of the people thought it was a good idea. Why eliminate that career path completely for people? I also cited an old report we had studied about the standardized testing in the public schools. The article was slanted, stating that only 3% of 6s and 7s tested to elevated levels of intelligence, and since it was so low, it was clear they were intended to stay where they were. My argument was that we ought to be ashamed that these people are stuck digging ditches when they could be performing heart surgeries. Finally, the daunting task was nearly over. Perhaps our country is flawed, but we cannot deny its strength. My fear is that without change, that strength will become stagnant. And I love our country too much to let that happen. I hope too much to let that happen. I swallowed, grateful that at least it was over now. Thank you for your time, I said, and turned slightly toward the royal family. It was bad. Maxon's face was stony again, like the way he'd looked when Marley was caned. The queen averted her eyes, looking disappointed. The king, however, stared me down. Without so much as a blink, he focused in on me.
"And how do you suggest we eliminate the castes?" he challenged. "Just suddenly take them all away?"
"Oh, I don't know."
"And you don't think that would cause riots? Complete mayhem? Allow for rebels to take advantage of public confusion?"
I hadn't thought this part through. All I could process was how unfair it all was.
"I think the creation caused a decent amount of confusion, and we managed that. In fact," I reached to my pile of books, "we have a description here."
I started looking for the right page in Gregory's diary.
"Are we off?"
he bellowed.
"Yes, Majesty,"
someone called. I looked up and saw that all the lights that usually indicated that the cameras were on had gone dim. In some gesture I'd missed, the king had shut down the report. The king stood.
"Point them to the ground."
Each camera was aimed at the floor. He stormed over to me and ripped the diary from my hands.
"Where did you get this?"
he yelled.
"Father, stop."
Maxon jogged up nervously.
"Where did she get this? Answer me."
Maxon confessed.
"From me. We were looking up what Halloween was. He wrote about it in the diaries, and I thought she'd like to read more." "You idiot," the king spat. "I knew I should have made you read these sooner. You're completely lost. You have no clue of the duty you have."
"Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no."
"She leaves tonight," King Clarkson ordered. "I've had enough of her."
I tried to shrink down, distance myself from the king as much as I could without being obvious.
I tried not to even breathe too loudly. I turned my head toward the girls, for some reason focusing on Celeste. I'd expected her to be smiling, but she was nervous. The king had never been like this.
You can't send her home. That's my choice, and I say she stays.
Maxon responded calmly.
Maxon Calix Shreve, I am the king of Ilia, and I say... Could you stop being the king for 5 minutes and just be my father?
Maxon yelled.
This is my choice. You got to make yours, and I want to make mine. No one else is leaving without my say-so.
I saw Natalie lean in to Elise. They both looked like they were shaking.
Amberly, take this back to where it belongs, he said, shoving the book in her hand.
She stood there nodding her head, but not moving.
Maxon, I need to see you in my office.
I watched Maxon, and maybe I only imagined it, but it looked like panic flickered briefly behind his eyes.
Or, the king offered, I could simply talk to her.
He gestured over to me.
No,
Maxon said quickly, holding up a hand in protest.
That won't be necessary. Ladies, he added, turning to us, why don't you all head upstairs? We'll have dinner sent to you tonight.
He paused.
America, maybe you should go ahead and collect your things, just in case.
The king smiled, an eerie action after his recent explosion.
Excellent idea. After you, son.
I looked at Maxon, who seemed defeated. I felt ashamed. Maxon opened his mouth to say something, but in the end he shook his head and walked away. Chris was wringing her hands, looking after Maxon. I couldn't blame her. Something about all of this seemed menacing. Clarkson, Queen Amberlee said quietly, what about the other matter?
What?
He asked in irritation. The news, she reminded him.
Oh, yes.
He walked back toward us. I was close enough that I decided to retreat into my chair, afraid of being out there alone again. King Clarkson's voice was steady and calm.
Natalie, we didn't want to tell you before the report, but we've received some bad news.
Bad news? She asked, fiddling with her necklace, already too anxious. The king came closer.
Yes, I'm very sorry for your loss, but it appears the rebels took your sister this morning.
What? She whispered.
Her remains were found this afternoon. We're sorry.
To his credit, there was something close to sympathy in his voice, though it sounded more like training than genuine emotion. He quickly returned to Maxon, escorting him forcefully out the door, as Natalie broke into an ear-shattering scream. The queen rushed over to her, smoothing her hair and trying to calm her down. Celeste, never too sisterly, quietly left the room, with an overwhelmed Elise close behind. Chris stayed and tried to comfort Natalie, but once it was clear that she couldn't do much, she left as well. The queen told Natalie there would be guards with her parents for good measure, and that she would be able to leave for the funeral if she wanted to, holding on to her the whole time. Everything had gotten dark so quickly, I found myself frozen in my seat. When the hand appeared in front of my face, I was so startled I shied away.
I won't hurt you, Gavril said. Just wanted to help you up.
His lapel pin shimmered, reflecting the light. I gave him my hand, surprised by how shaky my legs were.
He must love you very much, Gavril said once I had my footing.
I couldn't look at him. What makes you say that? Gavril sighed.
I've known Maxon since he was a child. He's never stood up to his father like that.
Gavril walked away then, talking to the crew about keeping all that they had heard tonight quiet. I went to Natalie. It wasn't like I knew everything about her, but I was sure she loved her sister the way I loved May, and I couldn't imagine the ache she must be feeling. Natalie, I'm so sorry, I whispered. She nodded. That was the most she could manage. The queen looked up at me sympathetically, not sure how to convey all her sadness. And
I'm sorry to you, too. I wasn't trying to. I just...
I know, dear. With how Natalie was doing, asking for more of a goodbye was too selfish. So I gave the queen a final, deep curtsy and slowly left the room, wallowing in the disaster I created. Chapter 28. The last thing I was expecting when I walked in my doorway was the smattering of applause from my maids. I stood there for a moment, genuinely moved by their support and comforted by the shining pride in their faces. Once they were done making me blush, Anne took me by the hands. "Well said, miss." She gave a gentle squeeze, and I saw in her eyes so much joy over my words. For a second, I didn't feel so awful. "I can't believe you did that. No one ever stands up for us," Mary added. "Maxon has to pick you," Lucy cried. "You're the only one who gives me hope." Hope. I needed to think, and the one place I could really do that was the gardens. Though my maids were insistent that I stay, I left, taking the long way down a back stairwell on the other end of the hall. Besides the occasional guard, the first floor was empty and quiet. It felt like the palace should be bustling with activity, given how much had happened in the last half hour or so. As I passed the hospital wing, the door flew open, and I ran right into Maxon, who dropped a sealed metal box. He groaned after we collided, even though it really wasn't that hard.
"What are you doing out of your room?"
he asked, slowly bending to pick up the box. I noticed it had his name on the side. I wondered what he was storing in the hospital wing. "I was going to the gardens. I'm trying to figure out if I did something stupid or not." Maxon appeared to be having a difficult time standing.
"Oh, I can assure you it was stupid."
"Do you need help?"
"No," he answered quickly, avoiding my eyes. "Just heading to my room, and I suggest you do the same."
"Maxon." The quiet plea in my voice made him look at me. "I'm so sorry. I was mad and I wanted to... I don't even know anymore. And you were the one who said there were perks to being a one, that you could change things."
He rolled his eyes. "You're not a one."
There was a silence between us.
"Even if you were, did you not pay attention at all to the way I'm doing things? It's quiet and small. That's how it has to be for now. You can't go on television complaining about the way things are run and expect to have my father's or anyone's support."
"I'm sorry," I cried. "I'm so, so sorry." He paused for a moment.
"I'm not sure that..."
We heard the shouting at the same time. Maxon turned and started walking, and I followed, trying to make sense of the sound. Was someone fighting? As we got closer to the intersection of the main hallway and the doors to the garden, we saw guards come flooding toward the area.
"Sound the alarm," someone called. "They're through the gates." "Gates at the ready,"
another guard yelled over the shouts.
"Alert the king!"
And then, like bees intent on landing, small, quick things buzzed into the hall. A guard was struck and fell back, his head hitting the marble with a disturbing crack. The blood pouring from his chest made me scream. Maxon instinctively pulled me away, but not very quickly. Perhaps he was in shock as well.
"Your Majesty," a guard called, racing over to us. "You have to get downstairs now."
He gruffly turned Maxon around and shoved him away. Maxon cried out and dropped the metal box again. I looked over at the guard's hand on Maxon, expecting to see that he'd driven a knife into his back, based on the sound Maxon had made. All I saw was a thick pewter ring around his thumb. I picked up the box by the handle on the side, hoping that didn't mess up anything inside, and ran in the direction the guard was trying to move us.
"I won't make it,"
Maxon said. I turned back to him and saw that he was sweating. Something was really wrong with him.
"Yes, sir," the guard said grimly. "This way."
He pulled Maxon around a corner to what appeared to be a dead end. I wondered if he was going to leave us there when he hit some invisible trigger on the wall, and another one of the palace's mysterious doors opened. It was so dark inside I couldn't see where it went, but Maxon walked in, hunched over, without a second thought.
Tell my mother that America and I are safe. Do that before anything else, he said. Absolutely, sir. I'll come back for you myself when this is over.
The siren sounded. I hoped that was fast enough to save everyone. Maxon nodded and the door closed, leaving us in complete darkness. The seal was so secure I couldn't even make out the sound of the alarm. I heard Maxon's hand rubbing against the wall, and he eventually came upon a switch that dimly lit the room. I looked around and surveyed the space. There were some shelves that held a bunch of dark plastic packages, and a different shelf that held a few thin blankets. In the middle of the tiny space was one wooden bench, big enough to seat maybe 4 people, and in the opposite corner was a small sink and what looked like a very crude toilet. Hooks lined one wall, but there was nothing on them, and the whole room smelled like the metal that appeared to make up the walls.
At least this is one of the good ones, Maxon said, and hobbled over to the bench to sit.
What's wrong?
Nothing, he said quietly, and propped up his head on his arms.
I sat beside him, placing the metal box on the bench and looking around the room again. I'm guessing those were Southern rebels? Maxon nodded. I tried to slow my breathing and erase what I'd just seen from my mind. Would that guard survive? Could anyone survive something like that? I wondered how far the rebels had gotten in the time it took us to hide. Was the alarm fast enough? Are we safe here?
Yes. This is one of the places for servants. If they happen to be down in the kitchen or the storage area, they're pretty safe as it is. But the ones running about doing chores might not be able to get there quickly enough. It's not quite as safe as the big room for the royal family, and we have supplies to survive down there for quite some time. But these work in a pinch.
Do the rebels know?
They might, he said, wincing as he sat up a bit straighter. But they can't get in once the rooms are in use. There are only 3 ways out. Someone with a key has to activate it from the outside. Someone with a key can activate it from the inside.
Maxon patted his pocket, implying that he could get us out if he had to.
Or you have to wait for 2 days. After 48 hours, the doors automatically open. The guards check every safe room once the danger has passed, but there's always a chance they could miss one. And without the delay unlocking mechanism, someone could be stuck in here forever.
It took him a while to get all this out. He was clearly in pain, but it seemed that he was trying to distract himself with the words. He leaned forward and then hissed when the action added to whatever was hurting him. Maxon?
I can't take it anymore. America, help with my coat?
He held out his arm, and I jumped up to help him slide his coat down his back. He let it drop behind him and moved to his buttons. I started helping him, but he stopped me, holding my hands in his.
Your record for keeping secrets isn't that impressive right now, but this is one that goes to your grave, and mine. Do you understand?
I nodded, though I wasn't sure what he meant. Maxon released my hands and I slowly unbuttoned his shirt. I wondered if he'd ever imagined me doing this. I could admit that I had. Halloween night I had laid in bed and dreamed of this very second in our future. I thought it would be much different. Still, a thrill went through me. I had been raised a musician, but I was surrounded by artists. I'd once seen a sculpture that was hundreds of years old, of an athlete throwing a disc. I'd thought to myself at the time that only an artist could do that, make someone's body look so beautiful. Maxon's chest was as sculpted as any piece of art I'd ever seen. But everything changed as I went to slide the shirt down his back. It stuck to him, making a slippery, sticky sound as I tried to get it to move.
Slowly, he said.
I nodded and went behind him to try from there. The back of Maxon's shirt was soaked with blood. I gasped, immobile for a moment. But then, sensing that my staring made things worse, I kept working. Once I got the shirt off, I threw it on one of the hooks, giving myself a moment to gain my composure. I turned around and got a good look at Maxon's back. A bleeding gash on his shoulder tore down to his waist and crossed over another one that was also dripping blood, which crossed over another one that had been healed for a while. which crossed over yet another one that was puckered from age. It looked like there were maybe 6 fresh slashes across Maxon's back, piled on top of too many more to count. How could this have happened? Maxon was the prince. He was royal, sovereign, set apart from everyone. He was above everything, sometimes including the law. So how had he come to be covered with scars? Then I remembered the look in the king's eyes tonight, and Maxon's effort to hide his fear. How could any man do this to his son? I turned away again, hunting until I found a small washcloth. I went to the sink, glad to find that it worked, even though the water was ice cold. I steadied myself and walked over, trying to be calm for his sake. "This might sting a little," I warned.
"It's okay," he whispered. "I'm used to it."
I took the wet washcloth and dabbed at the long gouge in his shoulder, deciding that I'd work from the top down. He pulled away a bit, but took it all silently. When I moved on to the second gash, Maxon started talking.
"I've been preparing for tonight for years, you know. I've been waiting for the day when I was strong enough to take him on."
Maxon was silent for a moment, and some things made sense. Why a person who sat at a desk had such serious muscles, why he always seemed half-dressed and ready to go, why a girl calling him a child and pushing him would make him angry. I cleared my throat. "Why didn't you?" He paused.
"I was afraid that if he didn't have me, he'd want you."
I had to stop for a moment, too overcome even to speak. Tears threatened to spill over, but I tried to hold it together. I was sure it would only make things worse. "Does anyone know?" I asked.
"No."
"Not the doctor or your mother?"
"The doctor must, but he's quiet, and I would never tell my mother or even give her a reason to suspect. She knows Father is stern with me, but I don't want her to worry, and I can take it."
I kept dabbing.
"He's not like this with her," he promised quickly. "She gets mistreated in her own ways, I suppose, but not like this."
I said, not sure of what else to say. I wiped again, and Maxon hissed.
"Damn, that stings."
I pulled away for a minute while he slowed down his breathing. After a moment, he made a small nod, so I started again.
"I have more sympathy for Carter and Marley than you know," he said, trying to sound light. "These things take a while to stop hurting, especially if you're determined to take care of them on your own."
I paused for a moment, shocked. Marley got caned 15 times at once. I think if I had to, I'd pick that, over them coming at times you weren't prepared. "What are the others for?" I asked, then shook my head. "Never mind, that's rude." He shrugged his uninjured shoulder.
"Things I said or did. Things I know."
"Things I know," I added. "Maxon, I'm so..." My breathing hitched, threatening to send me over the edge. I might as well have caned him myself. He didn't turn around, but his hand searched and found my knee.
"How are you going to finish fixing me up if you're crying?"
I laughed weakly through the tears and wiped my face. I got everything cleaned, trying to stay gentle. "Do you think there are any bandages in here?" I asked, looking around the room.
"The box," he said.
As he sat there studying his breathing, I opened the clasps on the box, looking at the abundance of supplies. "Why don't you have bandages in your room?"
Sheer pride. I was determined never to need them again.
I sighed quietly. I read the labels, finding a disinfectant solution, something that looked like it would help soothe the pain, and bandages. I moved behind him, preparing to apply the medication. "This might hurt." He nodded. When it made contact with his skin, he grunted once, and then reverted to silence. I tried to be quick and thorough, ready to make him as comfortable as possible. I started putting ointment on his wounds, and it was clear that whatever I was using helped. The tension in his shoulders eased as I worked, and I was glad.
It felt, in a way, like I was making up for some of the trouble I'd caused. He snorted out a light laugh.
I knew my secret would come out eventually. I've been trying to come up with a good story for years. I was hoping to find something believable before the wedding, since I knew my wife would see them, but I'm still stumped. Any ideas?
I thought a moment. The truth works. He nodded.
Not my favorite option, not for this anyway.
I think I'm done. Maxon twisted and bent a little, moving gingerly. He turned to look at me, his expression thankful.
That's great, America. Better than any job I ever did.
Anytime. He looked at me a moment and the silence grew. What was there to say now? My eyes kept darting to his chest, and I needed to stop that. I'm going to wash your shirt. I buried myself in the corner, rubbing his shirt against itself, watching the water turn rust-colored before it escaped down the drain. I knew all the blood wouldn't come out, but at least it gave me something to do. When I finished, I wrung it out and placed it back on a hook. I turned around, and Maxim was staring at me.
Why don't you ever ask questions I actually want to answer?
I didn't think I could sit next to him on the bench without being tempted to touch him. Instead, I settled on the floor across from him. I didn't know I did that.
You do.
Well, what am I not asking that you want me to? He let out a long breath and gently leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees.
Don't you want me to explain Chris and Celeste? Don't you think you deserve that?
Chapter 29. I crossed my arms. I've heard Chris's version of what happened, and I don't think she's exaggerating anything. As for Celeste, I'd rather never talk about her ever again.
He laughed. So stubborn, I'll miss that.
I was quiet for a minute. So it's done then? I'm out? Maxon thought it over.
I'm not sure I could stop it now. Isn't that what you wanted?
I shook my head. I was mad, I whispered. I was so mad. I looked away, not wanting to cry. Apparently, Maxon decided that I needed to listen to what he had to say, whether I wanted to or not. Finally, he had me trapped, and I would hear everything he'd been waiting to tell me.
I thought you were mine, he said.
I peeked over and found him staring at the ceiling.
If I could have proposed to you at the Halloween party, I would have. I'm supposed to do something official with my parents and guests and cameras, but I got special permission to ask you privately when we were ready and have a reception afterward. I never told you about that, did I?
Maxon looked over to me, and I gave a small shake of my head. He smiled bitterly, remembering.
I had this speech prepared, all these promises I wanted to make. I probably would have forgotten it and made an idiot of myself. Though, I can remember it now.
He sighed.
I'll spare you.
He paused briefly.
When you pushed me away, I panicked. I had thought that I was done with this insane contest, and I found myself feeling like it was the very first day of this election all over again. Only this time my options were far more limited. And just the week before, I'd spent time with all those girls, trying to find someone who outshone you, who I thought I could want more, and failed. I felt hopeless. And then, Chris came to me, so very humble, only wanting to see me happy. And I wondered how I'd missed that in her. I knew she was nice and she's very attractive, but there was something more to her this whole time. I think I simply wasn't really looking. What reason did I have when there was you?
I wrapped my arms around myself, trying to hide from the ache. There was no me anymore. I'd ruined all that. Do you love her? I asked meekly. I didn't want to see his face, but the long pause let me know that there was something deep between the two of them.
It's different than what you and I had. It's quieter, maybe friendlier, but it's steady. I can depend on Chris, and I know without question that she is devoted to me. As you can see, there is very little certainty in my world. She's refreshing in that way.
I nodded, still avoiding eye contact. All I could think about was how he spoke of him and me in the past tense and had nothing but praise for Chris. I wished I had something bad to say about her, something that would bring her down a notch, but I didn't. Chris was a lady. From the beginning, she'd done everything well, and I was surprised that he had ever favored me over her anyway. She was perfect for him. "Then why Celeste?" I asked, finally facing him. "If Chris is so wonderful." Maxon nodded his head, seeming embarrassed about this subject. It was his idea to talk about this in the first place, though, so he must already have had something in mind to say. He stood, giving his back another tentative stretch, and started pacing the small space.
"As you now know, my life is full of stresses that I prefer not to share. I live in a constant state of tension. I'm always being watched, judged. My parents are advisors. There are always cameras in my life. And now you're all here," he said, motioning to me. "I'm sure you felt trapped at least once because of your cast, but imagine how I feel. There are things I've seen, America, and things I know, and I don't think I'll ever be able to change them. You're aware, I'm sure, that technically my father is supposed to retire in my 20s, when he feels I'm ready to lead. But do you think he'll ever stop pulling the strings? That's not going to happen so long as he lives, and I know he's terrible, but I don't want him to die. He is my father."
I nodded.
"Speaking of which, he's had his hand in the selection from very early on. If you look at who's left, it's pretty clear."
He started ticking off the girls on his fingers.
"Natalie is extremely pliable, and that makes her my father's favorite, as I am too willful in his opinion. The fact that he's so fond of her makes me have to fight the urge to hate her. Elise has allies in New Asia, but I'm not sure if that's of any use at all. That war..."
Maxon debated something and shook his head. There was some detail about this war that he didn't want to share with me.
"And she's so... I don't even know the word for it. I knew from the beginning that I didn't want some girl who would agree with everything I said, or just roll over and adore me. I try to contradict her and she concedes the point. Every time. It's infuriating. It's like she doesn't have a spine."
He took a steadying breath. I didn't realize how much she got under his skin. He was always so patient with us. Finally, he looked at me.
"You were my pick. My only pick. My father wasn't enthusiastic, but at that point you hadn't done anything to upset him. So long as you were quiet, he didn't mind me keeping you. In fact, he was fine with me choosing you if you were well-behaved. He's used your recent actions to point out the flaws in my judgment, and is insisting that he have the final say now."
He shook his head.
"That's beside the point. The others, Marley, Chris, and Celeste, were chosen by advisors. Marley was a favorite, as is Chris."
He sighed.
"Chris would be a fine choice. I wish she would let me closer, if only for the fact that I don't know if we have chemistry. I'd like to at least have an idea. And Celeste, she is very influential, a celebrity in her own right. It looks good on TV. It sounds right for someone who is close to being on the same level as me to be the final choice. I like her, if only for her tenacity. She at least has a backbone. But I can tell that she's got a manipulative streak, and that she's working this whole situation for everything she can get out of it. I know when she holds me, it's the crown she pulls close to her heart."
He closed his eyes, as if what he was about to say was the worst of all.
"She's using me, so I don't feel guilty using her. I wouldn't be surprised if she'd been encouraged to throw herself at me. I can respect Chris's boundaries, and I'd much prefer to be in your arms, but you've barely spoken to me. Is it so awful of me to want 15 minutes of my life not to matter? To feel good? To pretend for a little while that someone loves me? You can judge me if you want, but I can't apologize for needing something normal in my life."
He stared deep into my eyes, waiting for me to reproach him and hoping I wouldn't at the same time. "I get that." I thought of Aspen holding me tight and making his promises. Hadn't I done the very same thing? I could see the wheels turning in Maxon's head, wondering how literally I meant that. This was one secret I couldn't share. Even if it was all over.